Hi everyone, my name is Tiffany Ampene, and today we'll be dealing with the thought of unlawful arrest. What we'll be looking at in this podcast are, first of all, the freedoms that this thought seeks to protect. Secondly, we shall look at the three sources of law for the thought of unlawful arrest. Finally, we will look at the remedy which is available for the arrestee in the case of unlawful arrest. So, let us go right in. In Article 14 of the 1992 Constitution, it says that every person shall be entitled to his personal liberty, and no person shall be deprived of his personal liberty except in the following cases and in accordance with procedure permitted by law. Then we have A all the way to G telling us these exceptions. But the general principle and the general rule is that everyone in Ghana is entitled to freedom from physical restraint. And so the thought of unlawful arrest comes in because it is meant to protect against unlawful interference with a person's freedom of movement and personal liberty. So there is a provision in the Constitution of Ghana which guarantees the freedom to personal liberty, freedom of personal liberty. But when that freedom is infringed upon, then this tort of unlawful arrest comes in. All right. So we've looked at this freedom. We are talking about this tort coming in to protect that particular freedom of that person, of that individual. So when you arrest the person in violation of the law, when we're about to look at these sources of law, what you do is that you commit the tort of unlawful arrest. Let us look at the three sources of unlawful arrest. So first we have the common law, and second we have the Criminal Procedure Act 1960, which is Act 30, we'll refer to Act 30 in the rest of the podcast. And then we have the 1992 Constitution of Ghana. Let's start by defining what this tort of unlawful arrest looks like. And we will do that with the case of Christie and Lichinsky, which is the locus classicus for the tort of unlawful arrest. Now, in this case, some police officers went in. They were suspecting the respondent for committing a particular crime. However, when they went, they did not give the ground of the arrest. Instead, they told him that they were arresting him on the charge of unlawful possession, which was not what they had originally suspected him of. Now, in the judgment, Viscount Simmons was saying that if a policeman arrests without warrant upon reasonable suspicion of a felony or of an other crime which does not require a warrant, he must, in ordinary circumstances, inform the person arrested of the true ground of arrest. You must inform the person of the true ground of arrest. Now, he is not entitled to keep the true ground of arrest to himself. So if I come and I'm arresting you for a particular crime, and I tell you I'm arresting you for something else, I am guilty, not guilty. We don't use the word guilty when we're talking for torts, because torts are for civil matters and criminal law is for the criminal matters. And we'll say guilty in criminal law. We are saying that you are liable for the tort of unlawful arrest when you do not inform the person of the crime that, or the suspicion, the charge for which he's being seized. Now, if a citizen is not so informed, but is however seized, then that policeman is liable for unlawful arrest. Okay? So, he must be informed of why he is being arrested. And however, there is an exception to this. When a person is seized while he is caught doing the act, Okay, so he's in the process of doing the act, and so naturally he should know why he's being seized. If I come and catch you doing a particular thing, stealing, for example, okay, stealing, maybe I come and catch you and you have cocaine on your table and you are sniffing it, and I am arresting you, you should know that clearly it's the cocaine. So in the cases where it is the circumstances, under the given circumstances or under the existing circumstances, the arrestee is aware of why he's being seized, he does not have the right to now demand that you must tell me why you're arresting me. No. We're saying that, well, you must be told. But in the cases where it is very obvious what you're doing, you don't need to be told, because it is very obvious that this is the crime that you have committed. All right? Now, not the crime. Forgive me. It's not the crime. But this, oh yes, it is actually the crime, because when you are caught committing an offense or whatever, then you can be seized. That's when we are talking about arrest. Okay, now for the next thing, the requirement also does not mean that this person must be told in a technical language, you know, thou art therefore arrested according to, no, you just have to tell them in a language that they will understand, and we will look at a provision in the Constitution which also says the same thing. All right, but right now we're looking at the common law principles, and so Christie and Lichensky is the one is the case we are going to hold on to now. So we're saying that he shouldn't, does not mean that technical language has to be used. We're just saying that he must be told in a language that he understands. He must be told in a language that he understands. Now, another thing is that the person arrested cannot complain that he has not been supplied with the above information. When we talk about the above information, we're talking about the fact, the reason he's being arrested. We're talking about the language in which the arrest is made. We're talking about all of these conditions. Now, he cannot say that I've not been provided, I've not been supplied with this information, when he himself does not. He produces a situation where it is practically impossible to be informed. So you are in the process of being arrested, and then you start running away, or there's a counterattack, you start shooting. Of course, it's impossible for the policeman to tell you, hello, we are trying to arrest you because, no, it's not trying to, we are arresting you because of, you can't say that, because you're making the person who is being arrested, it's making it practically impossible for the police to tell them the reason for their arrest. Okay, so in that case, we cannot say that, you are running away, and I didn't tell. I mean, how do you expect a person to tell you when you are running away? So let's look at this common law position. When we finish this podcast, I shall go over all of the things I've said so that it's now clear and concise. Now, we're moving on to Act 30, and that's the criminal, another offense is the Criminal Procedure 1960 Act 30, Criminal Procedure Act, 1960 Act 30. So let us continue. Section 3 of Act 30 is very important, because we can see in Section 3 that you must touch, to arrest a person, you must actually touch or confine the body of the arrestee, unless he submits to custody by word or deed. So we see the definition of arrest in Section 3 of Act 30. A case that you should read is Asante in the Republic. And in that case, we see that the appellant was apprehended by the police and told to come to the police station. He refused to go, and because the police did not tell him why he was wanted at the station. So upon his refusal, the police constable seized his car key and was preventing him from driving away. So when he was retrieving his key, the appellant knocked the police constable down, and then he knocked him down. Then he kicked him and injured his trousers. Now the appellant was convicted on 2 charges of assault on the police constable in the execution of his duty, and then damage to the property of the police constable. When you read that case, you understand how the judges came to the conclusion. But what is very, very important is that his arrest was unlawful, okay? Because the police failed to tell the appellant why he was being arrested. He failed to inform him of the arrest. He failed to inform him about the reason why he was being arrested. And he did not have the right to do that, even to take his keys. Because what to arrest the person, you must touch the body, you must confine the body. And he was not even lawfully arresting him. Because first of all, he should have told him why he was arresting. He didn't tell him that. Okay. So he didn't have the right to do all the things he was doing. And if you read the case, you'll understand the reasoning of the judge. Because at the end of the day, his charge was set aside. Charles says that even about the damage to his uniform he didn't succeed in those charges. Now, in section 4, we see that if there's an occupier of a building, okay, there's an occupier of a building, if someone is arresting another person and you believe that that person has entered the house of a particular person, now that occupier of the building must allow you, okay, the reasonable facilities to search the place for the person. Okay, if he fails, you can break into the place and then effect the arrest. Now, there are other parts of that section, there's section 4, there's section 5, section 4 is what I just read, there's section 5, there's section 6, section 7, and all of these things are important. But like, there's a part in section 6, which is very important, and I'm going to tell you. Now, in the case of arrest, okay, the person arrested is to be subjected to no more restraint than is necessary to prevent his escape. And then we'll look here that when a person is being arrested, you don't need to exert so much force on the person, which is not necessary. Only a reasonable amount of force and restraint is necessary. And it's only that restraint that prevents that person from escaping. So in the case where the person has agreed to go with you, there is no need to exercise that force. But in the case where he's trying to escape, you can only exercise the force which is reasonable, just to prevent him from escaping. So you should look at other sections of the act. We look at section 7, section 8, section 9, section 14, section 15. We look at all of those sections and it will tell you a whole lot about arrest under Act 30. But another thing we must note under Act 30 is the forms of arrest. Okay, we have arrest with a warrant, and we can find that in section 72-73 of Act 30, and then we can also look at arrest without a warrant. And you should look at all of these things in Act 30. Now, warrants can only be issued by a judge and by a court of competent jurisdiction. All right, so if a complaint or a charge is made upon oath, a warrant can be issued. Now, when that warrant is issued, okay, it must state in section 72.3, it requires that the warrant must state briefly the offense with which the person against whom it is issued is charged. Then B, it must indicate the name or other description of the person. And then C, it must order the person or persons to whom it is directed to apprehend the person against whom it is issued and bring him before the issuing court or some other court with jurisdiction over the matter to answer the charges against him and to be fairly dealt and to be further dealt with according to law. What you must know is that the warrant must state the offense. First of all, if you are about to arrest with a warrant, these are the things that the warrant must contain. It must contain the offense. It must indicate the name of the person or another description of the person. Then it must also order a person or persons to effect the arrest. Now, the thing about this is if in the case where a policeman's name is on the warrant and another policeman is going to effect the arrest, it will not be a lawful arrest because the person who was ordered or to whom it was issued is the one who must effect the arrest. Okay? And so, in the case where the warrant is not executed because of these particular deficiencies, it must be regularized. So you have to take it back to the court for it to be regularized to fix these deficiencies. Okay, to fix these deficiencies. Now, when the arrestee asked to see the warrant, it must be produced. It must be produced. If it is not produced, he has every right not to go to the police station because where is the warrant to arrest me with? Now, we have another type of arrest, which is arrest without a warrant. And that can be an arrest by a police officer according to Section 10 of Act 30. And we have A to E, which tells us all of the conditions under which this arrest can be made. Now, there's also suspicion upon reasonable grounds, and this must be done by a policeman. Now, when it is by a private person, as according to Section 12 of Act 30, a private person may arrest without a warrant if the arrestee commits any of these five offenses. So, any offense involving the use of force or violence, any offense whereby bodily harm is caused to any person, any offense in the nature of stealing or fraud, any offense involving injury to public property, any offense involving injury to property owned by or in the lawful care or custody of that private person. But this crime must be committed in the presence of this private person. All these crimes I just mentioned, they must be committed in the presence of this private person. So in the case where this crime was not committed in your presence, you cannot go and arrest the person. You can't. It must be done in your presence. And then you can arrest without a warrant for this. So when we look at Section 10 of Act 30, we'll have more detail about an arrest by a police officer, and Section 12 will talk to us about the arrest by a private person. Finally, we're going to look at the constitutional provisions, and these can be found in Article 14, 15, 19, and 21 of our 1992 Constitution. And I read Article 14 in the beginning, okay, that every person shall be entitled to his personal liberty, and no person shall be deprived of his personal liberty except in the following cases, okay, and in accordance with procedure permitted by law. Then we can look at A, B, C, D, E, F, G of that same Article 14. And we'll get those exceptions to the general rule, but we all know what the general rule is. Now, Article 14.2 says that a person who is arrested, restricted, or detained shall be informed immediately in a language that he understands, and of the reasons for his arrest, restriction, or detention, and of his right to a lawyer of his choice. When we look at Christian Lichinsky, we see that this is very similar. This provision is very similar. It's saying that he must be told in a language that he understands, and of the reasons of his arrest. So the common law and our law is saying the same thing. Okay, so a person, if you look at, just look at 14 and look at 2, 3, 4, 5, it talks a lot about it. Now I'll get to the remedy available in a minute, but we can look at these provisions in article 14. Look at the provisions in article, I mentioned article 14, article 15, article 19 and 21. So you can look at all of those. Okay, look at all of those. Now, another thing that we must take note of is article 14.7. And it says that where, and this talks to us about the remedy which is available to the arrestee, where a person who has served, just a minute, I think the one, okay, right, so it's article 14.5, article 14.5, where a person is unlawfully arrested, restricted, or detained by any other person, shall be entitled to compensation from that other person. Shall be entitled to compensation from that other person. And then we look at 14.7. We also talk about where a person who has served the whole or part of a sentence is acquitted on appeal by a court other than the Supreme Court. The court may certify to the Supreme Court that the person acquitted be paid compensation, and the Supreme Court may, upon examination of all the facts and the certificate of the court concerned, award such compensation as it may think fit. Or where the acquittal is by the Supreme Court, it may order compensation to be paid to the person acquitted. All right? Okay. So from Article 14.5, we can see that a person who is unlawfully arrested shall be entitled to compensation. And the courts will always look at the surrounding circumstances to determine what is fit, what it may think fit. Okay, all right. So this brings us to the end of our discussion on unlawful arrest. First of all, we discussed that the liberties of a person, the freedoms of the citizens, is what this tort of unlawful arrest seeks to protect. And in the case where a person is unlawfully arrested, the person who caused the arrest is liable for the tort of unlawful arrest. We looked at the sources of law for the tort of unlawful arrest. We looked at the common law. We looked at the Criminal Procedure Act 1960, which is Act 30. And we also looked at the 1992 Constitution. We looked at this case of Christie and Lichinsky, where we outlined that if a person is arrested, he must be informed of the reason for which he's being arrested. And if that person is not informed of that reason, the people who caused the arrest are liable for the tort of unlawful arrest. These people cannot keep the true ground of arrest to themselves and tell the person a false ground of arrest. In that case, they will be liable for the tort of unlawful arrest. We also said that the person cannot say that, especially when they are found in flagrante delicto, caught in the act, they are caught doing the act, they cannot ask to be informed of the ground for their arrest, because it is quite obvious given the circumstances that be arrested for the particular thing that they are committing. Now we look at the language that must be taught, that the arrest must be communicated in. It does not have to be technical. It does not have to be anything strange. You can tell them in a language that they understand. And then finally, in Christy and Nijinsky, what we're saying is that in the case where the person who is being arrested does not provide a possible situation where the police can comfortably inform the arrestee of the ground for the arrest by running away, counterattack, or any other thing which will impede the police from arresting them, they cannot say that we were not told why I was not informed of the ground of my arrest, basically because they are the ones who impeded the process. So we've looked at that in Christy and Lichinsky. We came to our own law in Act 30. We looked at Section 3 of Act 30, saying that to arrest, you must touch or confine the body of the arrestee. We looked at the different provisions in the section. We looked at Section 4, 5, 6, 7, talks to us on the arrest, on the details of arrest, the elements which will make an arrest lawful. All right, then we went to look at Section 10 for arrest without warrant. Arrest without warrant by a police officer. We looked at Section 12. We looked at arrest by a private person. Then we looked at Section 72-73, which talked about a warrant, arrest with a warrant. And we're saying that when you're arresting with a warrant, it must be issued by a judge, by a court of competent jurisdiction. The warrant must state the offense. The warrant must state the name of the offender. The warrant must also have a description of that person. But then the warrant must be ordered to a person or persons to affect the arrest. So it must be issued to a particular police officer. Now, in the case where another police officer goes to affect the arrest when they are not the ones on the warrant, it is an unlawful arrest. Now, we are saying that if the warrant has some deficiencies, it must be taken back to the court for these deficiencies to be regularized. We went to look finally at the Constitution, the 1992 Constitution. We looked at Section Article 14 of the Constitution. We looked at 14.2, which talked to us about the person being told in a language that he understands of the reason for his arrest and also the rights that he has to a lawyer of his choice. We looked also at the remedy available for a person, and we're saying that that remedy is compensation, and that is determined by the courts. Whatever they deem fit is the compensation that will be made available to the arrestee. Now, another thing I want us to take note of is when it comes to the issue of language. If you are the policeman and you're coming to speak a language that the arrestee does not understand, if there is somebody on the premises who understands your language and can comfortably, rightly translate the reasons in a language that the arrestee will understand, and that person is free to do so. This has been the Tort of Unlawful Arrest. I have enjoyed spending time with you, and I hope that this has been helpful. Have a wonderful day, and see you later.